You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone and welcome along to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Series 9, Episode 34 coming your way this week. We're brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. And we have to start this week's pod by congratulating our good friend Anthony Quinn of Quinn AV, a huge Athlone Town fan and volunteer. And Athlone's women completing a historic league and cup double and quite a good final as well, actually. A good advert for the women's game, that final on Sunday at Tally, Gary. I don't know if you caught much of it, but some cracking goals.
Yeah, actually, I couldn't watch it. I was out and about, believe it or not, but I did catch the highlights, some great goals in it. But you really have to hand it to Athlone, who had a bit of a shaky season, just like their men's team, to be quite honest. They had a few changes in managers and European escapades, but they still pull off the double. In between all of that shows the players' class and their ability to get it done on the pitch. So fair play to them. A great achievement for Athlone.
Yeah, no congratulations for the men's team. Filled in by Longford Town on the last day of the regular season. Five wins in a row. We don't need Stato LOI this week. I can tell you, I've looked it up myself. I had a fair idea in my head the last time we had done that. It had to be 2014, and it was the season we won the league. So,
yeah, it's hard to believe. And you know, considering, you know, Longford Town have had some teams that were challenging at the top of the first division for a few of those years. You know, even getting promoted, I know it was by the skin of their teeth getting into the playoffs that time. But, you know, you still need to win a lot of games to get to that level. So it's hard to believe that it was that great season for Longford Town that the last time they've done it. But it's not an easy feat. You know, Bray went on a 7 or 8 game winning run this season. And I think that was as much as they ever got, you know, in their history. So to get that level of consistency at this level is just fantastic and a great way to end the season for Longford Town and their fans.
As you mentioned, Longford got promoted in 2021. A little bit of fortune getting into the playoffs. You need a little bit of fortune if you're to go up. And maybe Treaty United might have a little bit of fortune in what's unfolding at Cove. We're going to get to that later on. But Mick McDermott no longer in situ at St. Coleman's Park. It's kind of a flashbacks to what was our pal at Waterford?
Oh, Forrest, wasn't it?
He was the owner. Who was the manager?
Mark Bertram.
Yes, kind of shades of that about the whole thing. So
yeah, I think with that it was different though. You know, like they were trying to stay in the division. I know it's very similar, but like I think we mentioned it on a pod earlier on this season. Where will he go to the game on Friday? Will he be in Richmond Park? There he was with the hat on and everything. You know, it was great crack. No team really wants to do that, but from looking from afar, it's really enjoyable. Great for the league.
Yeah, not enjoyable for Cove fans anyway.
Oh, absolutely not.
We will get to that a little bit later on. We've got a lot to get through. Now, I know at the start of last week's pod, we said we won't spend long on Ireland and we ended up going on for 20 minutes. So we promise we won't do that this week, but we do need to touch on Armenia, because you were texting me last week after the game saying, lad, this is verging on an emergency pod, even though we won the game. And I was like, no, guys, we're not doing another emergency pod. So get off your chest, whatever you need to get off your chest now. Forever hold your peace.
Well, look, obviously, we're not in emergency pod territory at the moment, you know, mentally and physically. But I was very disappointed with the performance on Tuesday. I understand that Heimer is in probably some form of survival mode, I don't mean him personally and as manager of Ireland. I mean more, can we just get to the next window with it being mathematically possible to get through? And he did that, and he mentioned his shitty win, 1-0 win would be sufficient, and it was. And, you know, maybe the more learned listeners and people will be able to tell me that we didn't set up very similar to Portugal, but we seem to have. a very defensive setup for a team that not only is inferior to Ireland, I'll die in a ditch over that, but also for a game that was a must win at all costs game. I think there is probably fear in the team, in the players. Obviously, a lot of questions have to be really asked about the squad selection in, and I know I mentioned it already, or on last week's pod, where Seamus Coleman, Jason Malumbi, and I can't recall the other player went straight into the starting 11, having not been in the previous camp. That is a concern for me. Now, I'm not as hard on Heimer in that respect. John O'Shea has to take every bit of responsibility for stuff like that, particularly on the Seamus Coleman aspect, where it's clear, you know, John O'Shea is nearly there for that type of decision to be made correctly, because I have absolutely no idea what he does on the pitch. So I think we'll say, in the limited capacity that I see John O'Shea fulfilling in the backroom team of the Ireland national team, I don't see why Seamus Coleman wasn't in that squad. A lot of talk last week, I think Off the Ball mentioned it, or maybe it was Joe Malloy, saying that if Seamus Coleman can walk, he's in the team. And I think that's a huge failure on John O'Shea's part, that he wasn't in the squad in the previous camp. And you could see that, like we'll say, the first half was very flat. There was some boos around the stadium. I know that
not half enough,
absolutely. But you know, people don't like reporting that negativity. You know, I'm a better thinker than what's directly in front of your face.
All right, well, we'll actually get to the atmosphere and the match day, the whole thing around the match day in a couple of minutes. But I'm going to let you continue on there because
but it's not a soliloquy either. But I do mean, like, it took a couple of moments, 3 or 4 minutes into the second half, whatever it was, Seamus Coleman ploughs into the keeper, takes a yellow card. And I think that was just a signal that, you know, the fans, right, we're in this now, you know, this is the slog. We've decided that we needed to be a slog because we're playing five at the back and everything has to go through Caoimhín Kelleher in the goals. So I think that kind of did lift everybody.
That was the biggest cheer of the night up until the goal, was when Coleman plowed into the keeper and Ferguson kind of came in and three Armenian lads surrounded him and everyone was like, go on, Evan, get into them. That was the first bit of the crowd getting on their feet. It took that.
Yeah, it took that. And I think there's definitely a miscalculation that it's a symbiotic relationship, the crowd and the players. If the players do something, you know, we're still talking about Roy Keane hammering Mark Overmars in 2001 in Lansdowne Road. A lot of the listeners mightn't have even been alive for that game. We were. I remember watching that game. And, you know, you're thinking, I probably didn't understand the significance of it. But that, welcome to Dublin, lad.
Yeah,
that's what that was. And, you know, we never really saw that at all in the previous camp. And it was great to see Seamus Coleman going in and be like, right, you boys are in the game. I was very disappointed. And look, obviously great for Evan to score, and he is scoring goals, and he's more goals now than Robbie Keane had at this age and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I was disappointed with the first chance that he absolutely drove into the keeper's gut.
Couldn't believe it,
In a game of that importance, you have to be just kicking it by the keeper.
Because you always said to me, and you said it in Armenia when he got the goal, oh, I knew he was scoring that as soon as it went to him. You're confident anytime he gets a ball in that position, he's going to finish it. When Azaz played the ball through to him, I had the fist clenched. I was kind of celebrating already. I was like,
you were half in the air. Yeah.
And he just drove it straight at the keeper. But now look, a minute or two later, he gets the goal. But
he does get the goal. But even for that, like, that was a nice bit of play that Ireland didn't score from. The first time the Armenians, and we haven't mentioned the elephant in the room, the sending off, by the way. The first time the Armenians don't switch on, it's in the back of the net. So, like, we'll say we weren't even, you know, we were playing a depleted Armenian side away in our home national stadium, our home stadium, and we needed like 10 men of Armenia to switch off for a second to allow that goal to go through. That's notwithstanding that there was a couple of chances that should have been scored, that the keeper made some a couple of good saves. But this, the differences here is that there was always an element, I felt, that Armenia might catch us.
I think, and without the red card, they would have won the game. A lot of people are saying Ireland wouldn't have won without the red card. I think we would have lost without the red card. That game was drifting away into nothing.
Correct.
And when that happens, and we've said it all the time, the passiveness, the nothing's happening. When that's happening, not only are you further away from winning the football match, you're ever closer to losing the football match.
Absolutely correct. And you're given the bottle, the guts for the opponent to come in and be like, "Jeez, these boys aren't up for this.
Yeah.
These boys don't want this." The crowd are getting on their back. They're humming and hawing. And they're like, "Oh, you know, a misplaced pass." And the crowd has that massive sigh of 50,000 people together at once going, "Oh, Jesus, the usual. We're back to it again." There's no zip. There's no panache. There's no, you know, "We're going to run this show. Yeah, you bet us last time out, but we're going to show you what we're about." There was no display of who we are on the pitch. You mentioned it a couple of times. We're not playing, like, we're not hard to beat. We're not a pain in the hole to play against. Even if a team is going to come along and out-football us into oblivion and still score a couple of goals, well, they're going to know about it for a week after that they played Ireland. And I'm not saying be dirty or anything like that. I'm just saying you go hard, you go for absolutely everything. You lay into them. You make sure that you give absolutely nothing for free. And I found that even though as Ireland were 1-0 up, there was still that opportunity there for Armenia to, you know, carve out a chance. And it would have been chaos if Armenia got something out of that game. Just on the, you know, we were bailed out by that red card. Massive, massive generational head loss there by your man. But thanks to him for that on behalf of the Irish football and public. And on the final kick to the face was the late equaliser that Hungary managed to pull out of the bag. Very poor defending from Portugal. Again, a bit of carelessness at the back. But they're open to that as well. You know, I'm not saying that Ireland should have went at them a bit more, but like, it was backs to the wall for 90 minutes out in Lisbon. But, you know, that's a, you know, kind of hard luck story. I was just generally disappointed with the performance because of what was on the line. It was very, very basic arithmetic. If we don't win, we're diddled. And what didn't feel like that from the players on the night.
Yeah.
What was your take? I know I spoke there for a very long time.
I don't know
what you think, but...
No, you're very good there. I was pure relief when we scored. I wasn't celebrating, running around like a lunatic.
No, you know? It was just thank God.
Complete and utter relief. Just a big sigh came out of me.
Yeah.
I took no pleasure in the win. Going home, I was just fuming the whole way home. And it's all because of... you were talking about there, it wasn't a great performance, but it's everything that I dislike about this Irish team at the minute. Passive. Like that's the best word to describe them. In and out of possession. We don't close down and try and win the ball back when we don't have the ball. And when we have the ball, sideways, backways, Kelleher. Sideways, backways, Kelleher. Ball goes out. Let's pretend the long throw was back again. This time it was Festy. It's like we pick a different lad in every window. Right, lad, you're going to try this. Even if you've never done this in your life and you're no good at it, you're going to be the long throw, lad. And we do it once or twice in a game, and it's clearly not working. Like his was even worse than O'Brien's. It wasn't even reaching the 6-yard box, and we kept doing it. Compared to Armenia, they got a throw in, snap, it was in, and they were gone. They were playing. It was so easy for them to get the ball into the centre of the park from a throw in and get playing and get it down and get it moving. Whereas we were taking 5 minutes to go and get the ball, dry it, try the long throw, head it away first time. It was just absolutely like, what are we doing on the training ground? That's where you have to look at the manager, you look at John O'Shea, you look at the coaching staff. What on earth is going on there? I'm going to try and like touch on all the points very quickly. You made. You were talking about Hymer there, and you said you wouldn't be too critical of him, and I fully agree with your point on John O'Shea. But I think Hymer, some of the stuff him and some of the players are coming out with in the media, I think we've spoken about this before, just shut up, lads. Like Collins coming out after the game. Can someone please tell me why Collins is wearing the armband? If Seamus Coleman is on the pitch, he wears the armband. It's as simple as that. And it might seem like a small thing. I know the captaincy isn't as big in football as it used to be, but Nathan Collins is not a leader. He's not a captain in any description.
Can I just
finish on the point about what he said after the game. Oh, I believe we put pride back in the Irish jersey. Are you fucking serious? Seriously.
Yeah, I don't agree with that at all. Pride was reinstalled to a degree on Saturday. I thought they defended admirably, worked really hard, and conformed to what the game plan was that we all knew that was going on in front of our face. But this is, you can't be like that, setting up in a similar fashion for away to Portugal as a home to Armenia. Now, I just want to touch on the captaincy piece. You made a point that it's not as important as it used to be. The fact that we have, minus Seamus Coleman, who would be your snap person, who the first person off the tip of your tongue to say, yes, they're the captain.
Yeah.
You can't think of anybody.
No, huge problem.
Huge problem.
Yeah.
Maybe if I had 10 or 11 pints in me, I would say Malumbi. Just for smashing lads,
yeah,
right, to a degree. Seamus Coleman is the leader for every person in this country.
Yeah,
right. So, like, you know,
if Seamus Coleman was on the ballot for Friday, he'd win.
Absolutely. He wouldn't even have to pick up the phone.
Yeah.
It would be nailed on.
On Collins, and just, you've touched on this loads of times when I've been stood next to you at games, and I noticed it particularly on Tuesday. Armenia time wasting from minute one. Absolutely nobody in a green jersey within 5 yards of the referee's face.
Yeah. Do you remember that?
And the amount of times that Collins was like going over and taking lads away from, like, if there was a bit of aggro, Collins is going and pulling them away, and it's almost like he's apologising to everyone all the time. Oh, sorry, ref. Sorry, Armenia. Sorry, lads.
Yeah.
Whereas you said about Coleman. He went and he smashed the goalkeeper. I think he knew what he was doing there. Let's get the crowd up here.
Of course he did. He knew exactly what was going on.
And then, you know, a couple of minutes later, that little bit of aggro carries over and they get a lad sent off.
Yeah. Because, now, the one point I remember where I was foaming at the mouth was where the Armenian lad, he gets a head injury, right? And he's pricking in the middle of the park. And he walks over and then he gets treatment on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the line there, a yard away from him, but he gets treatment on the pitch. Referee allows this going on. And maybe 90 seconds later to 2 minutes later, Collins starts ambling up to the ref. Well, lad, what do you think? What's going on here now? Whereas he should have been in the ref's tonsils within 4 seconds of that happening.
Hmm.
I was. You know what I mean? We had Coleman going there on Friday. Saturday, after the game, going, oh, ref, you'll talk to Bruno. He's not the captain. Do you know what I mean? These are unacceptable pieces of shit from the ref that shouldn't be tolerated. Collins only loves tolerating them, just can't wait to tolerate them. And that's just not good enough. But the larger point is that every single person in the Irish camp will just default, you know, if they were asleep for the next 50 years and they wake up and the first question they're asked, who's Ireland captain? Seamus Coleman.
Yeah.
It'd be the next words out of their mouth.
I can't believe that would Collins be for every Irish self-awareness player. Himself to just, Even if Hymer says to him, no, Nathan, you're the captain, he should just, yeah, oh, you know, bother, boss, should literally walk over, take the armband off.
Go away, you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly.
No argument. Like, Look, we don't want to spend too long on this. I thought it was a disgraceful performance. Just as I said, everything that's wrong with that national team at the moment, no fight, no passion, no guts, passive. There was a lot of complaints on the day. Again, I think I tweeted it on the BTS account. Your man comes out at halftime, 0-0. People are fuming about the first half performance. He was just been booed off the pitch. your man comes out to sing Dirty Old Town. There was a lot of complaints about the anthem beforehand. Now, I am of the belief it doesn't matter if you have a singer, if you have a band, if you have whatever. I think the larger issue here is that a lot of people do not know the national anthem, which is very sad and needs to be sorted. But there was a lot of complaints about the general atmosphere. A lot more people turned up than I thought. There was probably 38, 40,000. I think they announced 45,000 or 43,000.
Yeah.
I don't think there was just that many there, but there was in around 40. So there was enough there to make a good atmosphere. Now, the performance obviously isn't lending itself. Now, a huge issue I'm in the top tier, but I have a good seat. I'm not too far from the front, so I have a good view. A huge issue around me on the night was that there was a huge amount of people that were at one of their first ever Ireland games. Now, that's fine. Everyone, you know, you have to go sometime, and this was an easy game to get tickets for. But there was about a row of 10 lads behind me. They came in late. They talked shite for the whole game about anything but the match. And then about 10 or 15 minutes in, they started talking about what minute should we go and get halftime pints. They got up out of their seats at 35 minutes, went out, and they didn't come back till about the 70th minute. Had no idea there had been a red card. And they asked the lad next to him, oh, you know, what happened or something? And he said, well, if you're in your seat, you would have known. He was basically saying, fuck off and don't annoy me. Then, you know, the atmosphere was just so flat. Like, there's a lot of people are giving out about the FAI's role in that, as I said, the music and everything else. But I know they've sent out a survey, and I'm sure a lot of people are having their say on that. But I know this is something we've talked about a lot on the pod, but we were in Portugal last week, obviously, and I talked about it there. The stadiums, like, you go in and there's basically a full shopping centre in the Benfica and in the sporting stadiums.
Yeah.
You've got any amount of food outlets, any amount of drink outlets, good value, good food. You go to the Aviva, you get a shite burger, a shite pint, and you pay through the teeth for it. And that does affect the atmosphere as well. It's just they're not making the most of the Aviva at all.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because there was an article there the other day that referenced how the FAI have lost 4 million in match day revenue.
Yeah.
No, that's not. It's very, very plain to see why. Now, make no mistake, I have not ran too many national stadiums, but it's very easy to see, like, if I don't have enough food and supplied in quick enough fashion, then you're not going to be making money. There isn't enough drinks options. That, you know, that's something that can be sorted, but, like, you know, there's deals here and this and that and the other, but, like, where I think the FAI need to return to is, like, let's not just ride everybody around us, you know, all the time.
The season ticket renewals are out this week, and their big message is, oh, we are freezing the price of the season tickets. You know, yes, we should be down on our hands and knees tanking them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, you have to frame it some way. Do you know what I mean? It's you know, they can't reduce the price. Well, they could, obviously, but, like, they won't. But I don't think they have to frame it some way. I think they probably got good advice that, like, lads, if you put the price up by 1 cent, there'll be war, particularly after the season that we've seen. But I do believe, like, you know, I've often said it. I did put it into the survey. From the FAI, it's unacceptable that the screen doesn't show the name and the picture of the person being substituted. You know, you just see substitution on the screen. I know that's a small thing, and I have the full power of all of my senses, thank God. But, like, for the people that are harder of hearing or hard of seeing, that's not helpful. And it's actually just unacceptable that a national stadium for the biggest sports in the country, and a modern national stadium, never, and that's not even getting into the PA lad, you know.
Please welcome back our visitors. Please be down on your hands and knees and welcome the visitors back to the pitch.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, but like,
serious, I think main character syndrome going on there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But I think like the small thing, like, about, like, it's just blatant disregard for people who, as I said, are hard of hearing or hard of seeing, just can't see the screen, or like, can't see that the lad down there standing still. I can't see his number. He hasn't moved. You know, worth the damn. You know, if you're on the upper tier like yourself, it's probably is difficult to see who's that coming on. and, you know, massive screens that are there are just on substitution. Like, it's so lazy, but it is like the definition of FAI. You know, I think it's a great tiny example that isn't resolved. The PA stuff, and I do have a big problem with the screens. You know, I don't know when I said it to you. Was it Saturday, Friday at the town match or somewhere else when Grealish was being substituted? You know, they had the montage of the goal from 12 different angles in the stadium as he was being clapped off by the English. Like, who was fight? I'd love to know, like, was, you know, what happened from that? Like, who had a conversation? Like, did, you know, Mark Hanum or whoever it was at the time collar a lad, can you come into my office, please? I'd be like, what the Jesus was going on for that?
Cannon would have only been loving it, I'm sure.
Oh, I know, it would have been blaming himself for that and loads of other people. But yeah, look, we've talked about that for a very long time. Hopefully the feedback on the survey is taken. I'm sure there's plenty of issues. The bell. Absolutely. Burn it out into another, the middle of the IRC, please.
Another example of main character.
Yeah, absolutely. Has to go. Absolute pain in the hole. But yeah, that's just one of the list of things, and hopefully, you know, trying to put a bit spin of positivity on it, we'll have you know, some better experiences in the National Stadium going forward. While we're on the topic, are you going to Budapest, my friend?
Yes. Oh. I don't know why, because it's going to be a dead rubber, but I'm going to go.
Have you booked on?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Thanks for letting me know.
Oh, I thought you said you weren't going.
Oh, yes, but the tether is like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
That's usually the way. I'm not going, and then, oh, no, I'm going.
Yeah, exactly. But the normal, oh, we'll have to talk about this offline. there's trouble in BTS Towers here, folks.
Last word, I suppose, one thing that would improve the atmosphere is a better team and a better manager, but we can only hope. Look, let's get to league matters. We've got a lot to get through, and we'll start with the Premier Division. We'll start with last night. We're speaking Tuesday night. Monday night, I didn't see it because I was at the snooker in Belfast yesterday. That was a good day out, actually.
Normally you would have tweeted 40,000 times about that. What happened there?
Bows against Pats, 0-0. There was plenty of controversy in the game, but there was no goals. Who does this result suit better? I suppose it doesn't really suit. It probably suit a Drogheda. I think there was a lot of Drogheda fans online celebrating this result last night.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably the most happier of the lot, really. Mm-hmm. You know, that no one was able to stretch out in front of them, because like Bows are playing Shells and Drogheda are playing Bows on the last day as well. So like there is. You know, a draw for the teams in front of you is just exactly what you need. Keeps everybody in touch. So I think, yes, Drogheda are the biggest winners out of this. Rennie getting sent off.
What was he doing?
Yes, pure stupidity. And yeah, I know there was lots of incidents in the game. Like it seemed to be, and I wasn't able to watch all of it, unfortunately, but there seemed to be a lot going on. Pushing and shoving and up and down and Malise this and headlocks. All of the rest, and yeah. But I think that's all well and good if someone's in some type of strong position, but neither team were. You know, you needed to get it done, you needed to get it sorted. Unfortunately, neither team was able to do it.
Yeah, that's only one win in Bow's last five. Pats, for all their troubles, obviously had that great result against Rovers, and we got a few tweets. People were like, oh, they're obviously listening to you. Some feedback to last week, not everyone in agreement with our comments about gutting the dressing room and some of the comments about Forrester, but look, we'll reflect on that maybe at the end of the season when we see where Pats end up. But they've had two wins in their last five, so Bows, one win in their last five is not good form for a team that's trying to qualify for Europe. And the infamous Phantom Pod that never aired, it was the same week that Bows, out of the blue, it would seem, handed Reynolds and his coaching staff new two-year deals. And we discussed that on the Phantom Pod, but obviously the listeners never got to hear it. So I think this is a good time to go back over it, because this is a conversation I'm starting to see emerge now within the Bows fan base online. Should Bows have handed out that contract at the time when Europe was far from secured and still is far from secured?
Well, it does depend on the the old T's and C's of the contract. Like they obviously went through a decent patch earlier on. They put a lot of good results to kind of get them out of their early season shit. And put them, you know, right up to the towards the top of the table. Obviously, that has kind of waned, you know, pretty much since August. Like, it's kind of getting back to good win and then bad loss, and you know, kind of mix and gathering results over the last while. But that's probably what we were kind of expecting from Bowes throughout the season. They kind of just spread it out a bit differently. Really shit, really good, okay. But that kind of seemed to, well, I wasn't expecting Rennie to get a new deal in the midst of that.
No, it really, and like I remember the day the email came through and I was like, what?
Was that from your Bowes membership? Was it?
Just a press release, but I was like, what? I was really, really, really surprised by the timing of it. Now, we did make the counter argument on the Phantom Pod that, you know, the league has changed in the last number of years. It's no longer season ends, everyone's on the dole, and everyone re-signs a new squad. If you're going to be successful now, there has to be consistency in your squad. You have to get players signed up to long-term deals, and we have that now in the league, which is great. So obviously the manager, there needs to be kind of clarity there coming towards the end of the season. He's obviously trying to think ahead to next season already, regardless of whether they qualify for Europe or not. I'm sure there's players he's identified, areas he's identified. So in a way, you can see why they'd want to get that done.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't qualify for Europe, you know exactly what the reaction is going to be like within the Bowes fan base. And we're back to square one yet again, where we started this season with Reynolds, where we ended with Declan Devine. One or two bad results start next season. Chaos.
Yeah. And that, you actually took the words out of my mouth there. It's not really now that the issue with Reynolds appears. It's later on when you're having won a game in the first four of the season and you drew against, you know, Dundalk at home or whatever, you know, the promoted team. So that, you know, it's bad news, and it gets worse when you don't have Europe to look forward to on top of that, and you're also stuck with the lad, you know, after giving him a new deal.
So I
think maybe on one hand, you know, there was a bargaining chip there from Bohemians where, look, we can't give you Europe money because we're not in Europe, but we're happy enough with what you've done in the league to give you another deal. And if you get Europe, great. We'll give you a bonus based on that. Maybe it was something like that. Obviously, I haven't a bull's notion, but I think on one hand, if the people at Bowes are generally happy with what was done, then I think it was only right to offer him a new deal on one hand. But if you're a Bowes fan and you're wanting a European tour, even against your green morals, you'd have to, you know, you're going to be really scrutinizing Rennie, and particularly the business that he does in the off season as well. Like, you know, he's really rang up any former Bowes player who played well before to get them back into the squad. And he has been backed, you know, he got Douglas James Taylor, my old pal, in over the summer. He has Devoy, who's been playing really well, Tierney, who's been playing well. You know, he's got backed. So he has to continue that and attract the right player. And I know that that's probably a bit more difficult as well within Bowes, because you have Pat Fenlon that's also mooching around the place. It is a strange one, but I can see why one might have done it.
Yep, 100%. As I said, Pat's had that great win against Rovers on Friday. So Rovers making heavy lifting of it at the moment. Derry kept the title race alive, though, with a 2-1 win against Waterford. Waterford, again, shooting themselves in the foot, basically putting the ball on a plate for Michael Duffy for the winner. Another incredible goal for Michael Duffy. Since then, we had a tweet out picking up some comments from Tiernan Lynch, who said for the life of him, he cannot understand how Michael Duffy is not in the Ireland squad.
Yeah.
Give me your views on that. incredible numbers this season.
Sorry?
Incredible numbers this season. Like, he's at his 2018 Dundalk level of form, 11 goals and probably nearly as many assists.
Yeah, carrying Derry through a lot of shit. Your buddy, he is a fantastic player. You know, I've been really doing a bit of soul searching and I haven't really found it. Well, I do have a soul, I think. But I've been trying to, you know, go through, you know, I've been doing a bit of flip-flopping on League of Ireland players in the national team. I don't see how he could hurt. And the reason that I would agree with Tiernan Lynch on that one in particular, because, now, forgive my knowledge, there was a bloke from Dundee, was it, that was called into the squad?
Is that Ferry?
Aye. What did you make of that calling up?
Well, I know this is going to probably lose us a lot of listeners, what I'm about to say, because I'm sure a lot of listeners here probably support Celtic and follow the Scottish League. This season, Celtic are absolutely useless. Rangers are 10 times worse.
Okay.
Look at the Scottish results in Europe. Atrocious. I can see, you know, a player plays for Celtic playing in the Europa League, I can see where they get called up. The lower we go down that league, I really don't think there's much of a difference between the two leagues.
No, particularly like we look back at Sligo in recent years, beating
Motherwell.
Yeah. But competing with Motherwell, not, we'll say, you wouldn't just look at that because of the bet them, but they were competing with Motherwell. As regards...
Now, on the Michael Duffy situation, I think it should have happened at some stage.
Yeah.
It's probably too late now. He's 31. And I know we've had play, and a lad scored today. Do you know who scored today?
For who?
David McGoldrick.
Oh, I did see the boy.
I was in the studio. Who's he playing with now at the minute? Can't remember who he's playing with, but he scored anyway. And I said, David McGoldrick has scored here. And I looked, I think he's 37. And I actually said it in the studio. I was like, the way he's going, you just wouldn't know the Irish team is in at the minute. But look, I know like Wes Hoolan didn't get his debut till he was nearly in his 30s. McGoldrick was the same. So I wouldn't just cast Duffy aside and say he's in his 30s now, it's too late. He's having an incredible season. I personally think he's the player of the season in the league, and that's a debate we'll be having over the next few weeks. We haven't got too many shows left now, but just looking at the poll we put up a poll, should Michael Duffy receive an Ireland call-up? 55.8% of you said yes, he's one of the League of Ireland's best. 31.6% said no, he's not good enough, and 12.6% are kind of in the camp that I'm with that said he should have, but maybe not now. Just some of the replies then we got to that. ADOC said, I think him, Burke, Mandreou, Healy or Devoy would be an upgrade on them. So in terms of getting into the national team. There's a Sligo fan who said, come around to yourselves, all of you, clowns. Podrick said, if he played for Rovers, he'd be in the squad. Noel said, there's at least 68 clubs in the English league playing at a higher standard that haven't signed them. Are they all wrong? And then Shane just said outright no. So a bit of a mixed reaction there.
There are some very good point or fair points there. Like, we'll say, why haven't a championship club come in for him? Yeah, and I think that's a fair question.
But we don't know. We don't know who's been in for him. He's playing for his hometown team. I'm sure he's well compensated for that as well.
Yeah. But like, we'll say, why wasn't he signed by someone when he was bouncing, as you mentioned, in 2018 for Dundalk?
There was definitely a lot of talk he was going to go at that time. And I think Dundalk gave him a 2-year deal. So again...
You're telling me some lad in the championship couldn't double his wages and give him a 3-year deal? Mm. Sorry, that's bollocks. And we know that. You know, a 2-year deal from Dundalk is not, oh my God, I can retire.
That was the peak six era. You wouldn't know why he would have been on.
But I find it difficult. Like, we'll say Duffy, yes, I would be probably in the safe camp of saying, yeah, should have, but not now. It's very hard to know, really is.
Yeah. Anyway, he scored a very important goal there for Derry.
And also assisted the first goal, which is really well done as well.
Shells 3, Sligo Rovers 1. Shells look like they're probably not guaranteed, but that they're almost there, aren't they, in terms of a European place. They're ending the season very strongly. I think you've got to say kudos to Joey O'Brien for the job he's done since he's gone in there.
Yeah, we did kind of reference that earlier on.
We did.
In the season, but
that was fairly early on in his reign. I think that was when he qualified them for Europe. We just said how he had navigated it so smoothly, but he's had to mix, a lot of other competitions in between since then. And I just find he's gone in there and gone about his business quite quietly, maybe a little bit different to his predecessor, perhaps in that regard. But it's been fairly smooth sailing, I would suggest.
Exactly what I would say. I thought there was an opportunity for Sligo. I think they went 1-0 up in the game. They did. Shells did really well, dug it out. And as you said, probably home and hose in European positions for next year. Obviously, they have a game on Thursday as well. It's all pointing up at the minute for Shells. And you do have to give a lot of credit to Joey O'Brien for doing that, because it was, Duffer being there for so long, it was a bit of a tricky
and look,
one.
You've mentioned him there. I just want to throw it back to the top of the podcast. We were talking about Ireland. Heimer obviously won't be here beyond the next window. There seems to be a bit of a push. There seems to be a bit of a push at the moment. The Damien Duffer Ireland calls, I'm hearing a lot more of them, and from non-League of Ireland people too. And I know you've been against this in the past, so I just want to get your gauge on this now. Duffer for Ireland, yes or no? Hesitation.
Well,
before it was definitely a staunch no.
Yeah, I still do think that, I know that, and it has been mentioned in other sporting outlets, where there is this idea that we can disregard that he walked out on the team. To a degree, we've tried everything and we're all out of ideas. Why not, really, at this point?
Wouldn't be
so,
fine.
Fine.
I'd be happy for him. I would love him and Keane, and I know that's never going to happen.
Why is that? Why would that never happen?
Because
they don't have the money, probably.
They don't have the money, for starters. Why is Roy Keane going to leave? Well, I don't know. Is he on TV?
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant Robbie.
Jesus, no.
mentioned. He has been mentioned.
That won't happen for a while, I don't think. Probably will happen at some stage, won't for a while. But I'd love him and Roy Keane. Roy is the boss, but he's not going to leave Sky in the money he's on to.
Well, I actually think he would if the thing was right in Ireland.
Maybe he could mix the two. I don't know.
Well, whatever about mixing the two, from the bits of content that I see that he does, I think he enjoys that and gets a good bit of crack out of it. And there's, not as much pressure and the rest of it. But I think there is a yearning in him to win again. And he's already worked with Ireland previously, and I think he might be up for doing that again. I think the constitution of the FAI would have to be quite different for that to occur, because we're still in the middle of the stink of the whole Heimer process.
Yeah,
what's Mark Hannum doing right now? Shiting on about some shite that how the great job he did for the FAI. Well, look how that's working out for you now. I think we probably need maybe a good Euros, and we're looking into the 2030 qualification campaign. That's a long way away from now, but is that a time, or will Roy Keane be too old then and too far away from the game? I don't know.
We'll go back to league matters. Drogheda United claiming a crucial 1-0 victory against already relegated Cork City, but very much keeps Drogheda in the hunt. Don't know if you've got anything you want to add on that.
Not really. They did exactly what they needed to do. Keeps them in the hunt, particularly with the the Bulls Pats draw on Monday.
And speaking of Bulls beating on Friday, at home to Galway. So all of a sudden,
It was down in Galway.
Sorry, yeah. All of a sudden, Waterford into the ninth position, as I have suggested for a long time, where they will finish. But Sligo looking over their shoulders. They've only got 6 goals to spare on Waterford. They're level on points. Galway's goal difference could be the saviour. They're much better goal difference than the other two. But all three of those teams locked on 37 points.
And there is one thing there. Sligo's next game is against Cork.
Yeah. And Waterford and Galway play each other on the final day.
Yeah, Waterford have very few points available to them in the two next games. They're away to Pats and Richmond on Friday, and then home to Galway on the last day. Will they get a point out of either of those games? And a point will be no good, because if Sligo beat Cork on Friday, which we expect them to do, a point, you know, and I might expect Waterford to lose against Pats. A point will be no good on the last day.
And plus Galway have probably a game again. Well, we don't know what's going to happen in Derry on Sunday, but if Rovers have it won, Galway play them on Wednesday, maybe get something out of that game. I think Waterford definitely out of the three are probably most people's favourite.
Most perilous position, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So on to the first division, and we'll start with the game of the most significance from last week. That was the straight shootout for the final playoff place at Ferry Carry Park between Wexford and Treaty. And it was Treaty United that ran out 2-0 winners. I think we have to say, Gary, a massive congratulations to Tommy Barrett and to Treaty. That's an amazing achievement for them. I don't think too many people expected them to get into the playoffs this season, and they've gone and done it. And I think we have to say we were right. We stuck up for poor old Tommy all season long when he was taking dogs. But we said he was the best man for the job, and he's got them into the playoffs. And as we touched on earlier, could be a nice time to be coming up against Cove in those playoffs.
It certainly could, yeah. I think when you look throughout the division as a whole, Treaty did very well to get into that position. There were 3 points ahead of Longford, who finished in sixth. There was times this season that it looked a bit hairy, that they wouldn't be able to keep going. I thought the loss against Longford was going to be a difficult one for their playoff chances, but they beat Bray at home and went down to Wexford on the last day, knowing exactly what they needed to do. A draw would have done them, but they went ahead and won it. So I think that says a lot about their character, and that they do have something in that team to maybe go a bit further in the playoffs.
Not so sure about that now. I think getting to the playoffs is probably the height of the success they'll have this season, but they've done incredibly well, because they had that run where with 13, 14 games without a win, or maybe one win in that time, and they were sliding and hanging on to that fifth spot. And they had, at the time, Harps had a really good run, and we said, oh, Harps are favourites now to finish in that top five, and Harps fell away. Wexford came at them with a strong challenge at the end. They go and beat them on the final day. Longford came with a challenge, and look, another game or two, I think Longford might have caught them, but they didn't. So they've held off all them challengers. So it does show good character, as you said. Just to flip it to Wexford, though, I think we said numerous times during the season, when it looked like they weren't going to make the top five, that would be a massive failure for them. And first thing I done when I got home Friday night from Athlone, I said, I'm going to have a look at the Wexford socials and see what the reaction is like. I couldn't believe how positive the reaction was from a lot of people. Great season, very unlucky. So I messaged a couple of Wexford fans. I wanted to get their opinion on this, and I got a really good response. I'm not going to say who it's from, and it is quite a lengthy one, but I'll try and get through this as quickly as I can. There was enthusiasm at the appointment of Stephen Elliott, but it was clear from early on in the offseason that the financial backing that was there over the past two seasons, the two biggest budgets Wexford have ever had, had been significantly reduced. That was obvious from the recruitment and fed into a lack of optimism going into the season. The squad we assembled at the beginning of the year was very light, too light, particularly considering some key players had been injury prone over the years. The squad depth wasn't there. Major injuries early on exposed that. Jack Larkin, ACL 3 games in. Luke Kehoe on loan from Pats out for the season after a few games. Dobbsy out for months. McCourt for months. Ill-discipline cost us two. Too many suspensions. Because of how thin the squad was, players from the fringes of the squad and from the academy became starters out of necessity. Some of them turned out to be good, to be gems like Callum Flynn, but others simply weren't ready. If you look at the bench from the first half of the year, it was very limited. There was probably a naivety and inexperience on Stephen's part when building that squad, reduced budget or not. The business in the summer window was good and we finally had some strength and depth, but we were just too inconsistent. That reflects the inexperience in the dugout and the lack of leadership on the pitch, in my opinion. It's interesting you pick up on the lack of reaction. I think people somewhat lost interest in the middle of the season and checked out. Attendances dropped in the summer at Ferry Carrig and it became a bit of a morgue for a while. Picked up again as we gathered some momentum, but ultimately felt like the club stagnated this year rather than progressed. In terms of next season, I'd be confident Stephen will still be in charge. Every time I speak to him, he's all in, full of energy, enthusiasm and commitment to the development of the club. I think he probably needs a more experienced head in the dugout alongside him other than a physio. I think all of his backroom team were in the first their first season at first team level. Have to hope a lot of lessons will have been learnt this year.
I think that's a very rounded.
Yeah.
And probably a bit more, probably a wider held feeling throughout the fan base, maybe. There definitely was an inexperience issue there, but that happens. What would have happened, and I think Ethan mentioned this, what happened if Mikey Rowe wasn't there?
Yeah, would have been a very, very, very poor season.
Yeah. Now, obviously, look, if you know, what would happen with Cove if they didn't have Barry Coffey?
And what would have happened if Dobbsy was fully fit? Well, I don't think he was probably fully. If we were to speak to Tara now, I think he'd tell you he was probably not right all season.
Yeah, and if my auntie had ball, she'd be my uncle. Mm. So if and everything, you know what I mean?
But I was just, I really wanted to get that inside view because us looking at it, we look at James Keddie was down there the last two seasons, got them into the playoffs the last two seasons and got them to an FAI Cup semi-final. And for whatever reason, he left. And then a new man, a big name comes in, Stephen Elliott, former Irish international. I know it's his first job, but working in a very, very good academy at Pats, left that to come and take this job. We were all very excited. And some of the young players, he mentioned Callum Flynn there, that gentleman I spoke to. There was some other young players that came through this season. There was a lot of talk about the young players and a lot of excitement at the start of the year. And then it just kind of fizzled out. So it was good, as you said, to get that rounded view on things because we would have just looked at it from as outsiders. Well, they've been in the playoffs last two seasons, in a cup semi-final last season, and this season they miss out on everything. So it has to be considered a bad season. But there were other factors there as that person tells us. Elsewhere, the only other thing that was on the line really was who was going to finish third and fourth for the order of the playoffs and all the rest. Bray needed to get a result to secure that third spot, and they did. They actually hammered Kerry by 5 goals. The big talking point here was Billy O'Neill scoring 4 goals and then receiving an absolutely crazy red card as he was been subbed off, and he's been left out of the World Cup under 17 squad today as well, which has generated a little bit of discussion. But that's his second red card of the season. I haven't seen a suspension list yet. We obviously don't know exactly what he's been sent off for, but you'd imagine he's probably going to get at least 3 games, which rules him out from nearly all of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like it rules him out of the first leg or first encounter that they have. I don't really know what, like without knowing what was said or done, it's difficult to know what actually occurred. I saw people saying, or some people saying, like he should have been subbed off already. Why? You know, they're already guaranteed playoffs. Why would I put out the 19s then? You know what I mean? Like, I don't really agree with that. But no matter what way you slice it, it probably was for some type of something he said more than anything else. And so, you know, it's really his responsibility to not say anything and not get sent off. So here we are.
5-1 up, playoff secured. Well, I don't know. Again, there's been suggestions that maybe the referee didn't speak too kindly to him and he bit back. I wouldn't be the biggest fan of that referee in particular, but you're 5-1 up, you've scored 4 goals, just get off the pitch and look forward to the playoffs. And now he's ruled himself out of the biggest games of the season, which is very, very silly indeed. Poor end of the season from Kerry. They had that great run to the cup, but in the league, the progression maybe hasn't been as great as we thought it would be since Colin Healy came in. Be interesting to see what he can do in the off season there. Finn Harps 3, UCD 4. So UCD did what they needed to do. If they won, there was a chance that they could catch Bray for that third spot and have home advantage for the second leg. But as it ends up, they'll be away from home in that second leg. But there's a couple of questions.
Not the biggest journey there either, though.
No, there's a couple of questions in the hotline about the playoffs. So I might come back to that later on. But a good season for UCD, I think. Cove 1, Dundalk 2. Dundalk completed the clean sweep against Cove, 4 wins from 4, and a good way to cement their status as champions. But I suppose all the talk really after this, the absence of Mick McDermott, and as we found out, there was plenty of reason for him to be absent. He's no longer the manager.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, there was that tweet Friday morning from him, wasn't there? Was that Friday morning? I think it was.
Yeah, Friday, some say it's Friday anyway, yeah.
Yeah, well, I had a kickoff. Which I thought was strange, and there was people analysing and the photo on Twitter. There was something about the PFAI gambling rules and, you know, advice about that on the table. You know, was there something there? Probably, I would say a simpler story might come out in the future, but yeah, strange one. We referenced Mark Bertram earlier, and probably I'm not saying similar. I generally have no idea what went on. But it is a strange one. Like, they had a successful season. You mentioned there as well, like, there's 10 points in the difference in the table. If Cove had taken a couple of points from Dundalk, you know, that's the difference, really.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the clean sweep there. They needed to take points off Dundalk in one of the four games, and they didn't manage to do it. And, you know, it's your major challenger. Like, I know we'll be talking about Longford in a second, but, like, Longford got themselves into that position, we'll say, by beating Treaty away from home a few weeks ago. You know, they did. Longford perform probably above themselves in the last five games to get the opportunity to be even in the conversation for the playoff. And Cove never really were, because they never took points off Dundalk.
Just trying to see how I go about this. I have to hammer Cove here. We're always talking about too much niceness, not enough hatred in the league.
Oh, Jesus, yes. Yeah, okay. Thank you for reminding me.
They gave Kieran Gilduff a presentation before the game. Welcome to Cove. You bet us 3 times. We're going to roll over for you again. We're going to let you beat us 4 times. We're going to give you a guard of honour onto the pitch. And here's a presentation as well to take home with you.
Are you
shitting me?
Come on,
lads. Come on.
Yeah, it's disgraceful. Maybe that's why Mick McDermott left. He heard about this presentation that was going on. I was like, We have it. Yeah.
Case has been cracked. Yeah. And he'd be fully justified as well.
Absolutely. I'd back him to the hill for something like that. I thought that was desperate. Absolutely desperate. You know, I don't know, they're not exactly, you know, rivals or anything like that, but, like, Jesus Christ, boys, come on. You know, it's rugby levels of shite. Like, we don't want that in the game.
Just on Cove, I wouldn't have even before the Mick McDermott news broke, I wouldn't have fancied them for the playoffs, which might sound strange because they're second, and I think, you know, with the squad they have, a lot of people expect them to do well in the playoffs. Now, Richie Holland's going to take charge of Cove for the playoffs, and he's a very well respected, I don't know him personally or anything, but he's a very well respected character in Cork football circles. I just wonder if a manager leaving in the circumstances that Mick McDermott has left, I wonder if that might actually galvanise the group with Holland going in there. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a tune out with them. Look, I get the impression Mick McDermott would be a very all-in manager. And maybe there might be some players that might be too sad to see him go. I have no idea. I'm not within the Cove camp. I don't know what the feeling of the players were towards the manager, but I wouldn't be surprised if Holland gets a tune out with them. But if this news hadn't broke, if we were just talking about a routine 2-1 win here for Dundalk, and Mick McDermott was still in charge and getting ready to take them into battle against Treaty on Friday. I'd be saying to you, I don't fancy Cove for the playoffs. I've seen a lot of them lately, been watching their games online. There's just something, I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. There's something lacking there, and I just don't fancy them.
And so like you're saying, like I'll say, they didn't fancy playing under Mick McDermott. So this could be an opportunity for them to, you know, be free of Mick McDermott.
Possibly. And that's just pure guesswork. I have no idea how the Cove players feel about Mick McDermott. They might have absolutely loved him.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think, you know, from watching them against Longford last Friday week, that was the, you know, that was the opportunity. That was it. Do you know what I mean? And they didn't show up. Now, Longford were very good, as I'm very happy to say, and deservedly won that game. But, like, in the context for Cove, they needed to win that game. It needed to be done. And, you know, this is what we can control. We're talking about, like, what might happen for Ireland and whatever chances, small as they are, to get into a playoff place for the World Cup. You still have to go and show up and see what happens. And they didn't do that against Longford at all. So maybe you're onto something there.
Because even look at Shells, like the players we are told loved Duffer, but they seem to have improved almost since Joey went in.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just the right you character. Know,
even Meepo is a bit better.
Final game to discuss then, the final Midlands Derby of the season, Athlone Town 1, Longford Town 2. I don't know what Athlone's tally was in the end of the season in terms of how long without a win. I know the last win was May. I don't know how many games it was, but an atrocious season for Athlone Town. Longford 5 wins in a row for the first time, as we said, since 2014, and fully deserving of the victory here. Athlone take the lead with a brilliant goal against the run of play. Reese Webb with an absolutely top class cross. Can't remember who turned it in, but a brilliant goal from Athlone, a brilliant cross from Webb. And Longford kind of panicked a little bit after that, I thought, trying to force the ball over the top all the time, and just became lost their composure a little bit. Half time, 1-0 down, I said to all the lads around me, I think Longford will come back and win this. They just need to take a breath. And they did the opposite of that. They actually came out hell for leather, all guns blazing, foot to the gas, and got two very quick goals and won the game 2-1. That was a scrappy enough affair. That pitch is absolutely woeful, but it's an Astro pitch, what do you expect? Longford fully deserving of the win.
Yeah, 100%. Great way to end the season, of course. The Midlands is red and black. Thank you very much. But yeah, as you said, I actually... There was a bit of forcing in it, but there was some really nice play from Longford Town, even in the first half. I know you said it was a bit forced, but I thought some of it was quite good. I did feel like you, which was a bit of an odd feeling, where Longford Town are just going to win this game.
Yeah.
Which is strange to say, but they were full value for it.
I will say Athlone's back four fell to smithereens. Fell to pieces. I will say on Athlone, the last number of weeks, it's been noticeable they're fielding a lot of younger players. And obviously some players have left the club over the last while as well. And some players have gone out of the team for other reasons. And there's a lot of younger players that have come in. I definitely did not see a lack of effort from Athlone last Friday night.
Correct.
I thought they were really trying.
Yeah,
they just look very, very disjointed. But I think that's probably the right approach to get younger lads in, get rid of some of the bigger names that were there. I think that's probably the right way to go. But Ian Ryan has got an absolutely massive job on his hands now in the off season. And the other issue they have now, there was a good crowd in there. I think there was about 800 the other night. It was probably 150, 200 from Longford, one of the bigger Athlone crowds in a while. But you speak to anyone at Athlone and they're like, this manager, you know, he's come in, he hasn't won a game. He's got that against him now. He doesn't seem to have any buy-in from the supporters there. And I actually got chatting to the owner or the chairman, Nick Giannotti, before the game, because he was over for the Women's Cup final and he took in the game here as well. And he was saying to me about, you know, we really need to get the community back on side. They're going to have a very, very difficult time with that. It's hard to do that when you're winning and all the shit that's gone on at Athlone before in recent years. It's next to impossible to do that when the team is putting in results and performances like this. they've got a huge, huge task ahead of them.
Yeah, and it's very difficult to know where to go because, like, obviously there was a bit of money at the start of the season, so there's, you know, for all we know, there could be a couple of 2-year contracts in place. You know, is he stuck with players that he mightn't necessarily fancy? It is a tough one. But look, I think the probably bigger piece, whatever about the work he has to do, what has been the work up to this point? How do you go a season? Well, not a season, but like almost a season where you don't win a game.
Yeah.
If you bear me a moment. Let me see.
I know May was the last one. I'm guessing it was either Kerry or Finn Harps.
Yeah, but I think it was. You bear me a second. No, I can't see. I looked at it before the game. I think it was 22 wins or 22 games without win.
Jesus.
Now don't quote me on that because I'm trying to remember a stat I looked at before the game. So it's now 23 games. So yeah, not great. Not great. Not
great. And 4 months now to stare into that as well. No, geez, I wouldn't like to be in that position. Quick word, final word on Longford. Great end of the season. Still, you know, you're not going to get ahead of yourself. They didn't achieve anything in terms of, they didn't get in the playoffs, but they finished sixth, which was a lot higher than anyone expected at the start of the season. Just need to keep a hold of the core players there if they're going to give it a good go next season for the playoffs. But yeah, the playoffs, we now know the makeup of those. UCD will play Bray and Treaty will play Cove. And we will talk about those playoffs a little bit later. As I said, there's a couple of questions in the hotline about that. Right, time to go into the BTS LOI Podcast Predictions League. And before I introduce this week's player, we need to recap what happened last week. Now, last week, we recorded literally a couple of hours after I had landed in from Lisbon. So we ended up just getting Kira to play. We didn't have time to put a call out. She was next to me on the plane and we said, right, give me some predictions.
You could have roared out on the plane, got onto the panel or something.
Any League of Ireland fans.
Yeah.
You know, God forbid, is there any like medical trained personnel on this plane? Yeah. Imagine, is there any League of Ireland fans on the plane? Look, Kira with a stellar performance, top player last week.
Oh, lovely. Shit.
Eight points, one correct score, and that was in the Longford Athlone game, would you believe?
Great stuff.
So 8 points for Kira, bringing the listeners to 208. 5 points from yourself to bring you to 188, and I am right on your tail now. Like the relegation battle in the Premier Division, I got 7 points, so I am on 185, so just 3 points between me and you. Playing this week, we've got a Shamrock Rovers fan, and that is Oisin. He'll be hoping that his team can finally wrap up that league title this week. And we're going to start with, we won't start with Shamrock Rovers, we'll start with Pats against Waterford. Pats have to win this in the battle for Europe. Waterford have to win this to try and stay up.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. I'm veering between one of these shy Pats results.
Huffing and puffing and heavy lifting.
Yeah, but I'm not getting it over the line.
I just think Waterford's ability to gift wrap goals is going to be the killer here.
I'm going to go 1-1.
Oh, okay. Oisin going 1-0 to Pats. I'm going to go 2-1 to Pats. I think Waterford will be well in this contest and then they will just switch off for a second and it'll kill them. Galway against Drogs. It's, at the start of the season, we might have envisaged this being either a relegation battle or a European battle. It turns out that one team is trying to escape relegation, one team's trying to get into Europe. So how do you see this going?
I think Galway, like, they have an extra game. I know it's against Shamrock Rovers and Wednesday,
yeah.
I think they could do something here. They had a good result at home against Bowes. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Galway.
Okay, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw and Oisin going for a 0-0 draw. Sligo Rovers against Cork City. Most people have this down as a banker for Sligo. Is that the case?
Yeah, I'm gonna go 2-0 to Sligo with Elding to score.
Okay, Oisin going 2-0 as well. So I'll go with a different scoreline here just to try and get some extra points. I will go 3-0 to Sligo. Derry City against Shamrock Rovers. Can Derry just keep it going for another little while?
This game's in
the Brandywell.
Ooh.
This is on Sunday, of course, because Rovers play in Europe during the week, don't they?
Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing. Sonia O'Sullivan's daughter, Dervil O'Rourke. Who else am I thinking of? I can't Steve think of any other Long Isle distance runner. Jesus Christ, I never heard more about some lad running a marathon.
Ah, fair play
for
to him.
For God's sake. Yeah, fair play to him, absolutely. But Jesus Christ, there's a few other thousand people running the marathon.
Yeah, but he's raised... is it 33K? Did I read that? Is that how much he raised?
And fair play to him, but like... Jesus, sports media people, get off him, will you? For fuck's sake.
I think Derry can win this just to like falsify a title race another little while.
I do. But go on, you go first.
I'll go 1-0 to Derry. Rovers might be a bit tired after Europe.
That's what I'm thinking as well. Extra few days of rest for Derry.
The Rovers are at home on Thursday, so that's not too bad. But
yeah, but still, it's another game that you have to play. It's another bit of brain damage where all Derry have to do is just think about this game. I'm going to go 1-0 to Michael Duffy.
1-0 to Michael Duffy FC. Rovers 2-1 for Oisin, of course. Bows against Shells. Tasty, tasty stuff.
Yeah.
Shells now have a longer trip ahead of them this week.
Where in the world are they off to?
They are off to North Macedonia. And that game's tomorrow. Didn't spot that, actually. There you go.
Oh.
I won't be watching the Champions League early kickoffs, though. I'll be watching Shells. 5:45.
Interesting. I think Bowes could definitely do something here, but I'm not positive either.
Yeah.
I'm really hemming and hawing, as you can hear. Let me just have a quick...
I'm gonna go 1-0 Bowes, just because of Shells in Europe. That's a game the Shells really will be targeting tomorrow. I think they'll have full belief they can get something there, so...
Now, there's been a lot of draws in this in recent times. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, it mightn't be a bad show. Oisin going for a 3-2 win to Shelburne, but he is a Rovers fan. Right, then we've got the First Division playoffs beginning. Cove against Treaty. No Mick McDermott. Can Treaty capitalise?
I don't think so at home for Cove. I'm going to go 2-0 to Cove.
You're going 2-0 to Cove. Oisin going 2-0 to Treaty, so he's very much expecting the chaos to cost him there. Yeah, I'm caught in two minds. Like, will Holland galvanise Cove? I don't know. Maybe a draw first leg. Treat yourself defensive here. Try and take it back to the markets field. I'm going to go. It should be a good crowd. I wouldn't imagine that type of stuff affects a crowd, surely, for a game like this. Oh, it's tricky. Barry Coffey may be the difference maker. No, I'll go 2-1 to Cove.
Okay.
2-1 to Cove. And then we've got Bray against UCD. 2-1 UCD, straight in.
Away from home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll follow you on that.
I think it's great for Bray that they put 5 past a team in their last league game, because they really, I think they made a bollocks of the end of the season, to be honest.
They did, yeah, they did.
They totally took their foot off the gas and lost all momentum. So great for them to put 5 past someone and get a good bit of good feeling going. But when the lad that scored 4 of them is not going to be available.
Exactly, yes, you know? Yeah.
I reiterate, I think they've really made a bollocks at the end of the season. Oisin going 2-1 to Bray, though. Right, that brings us to the BTS hotline. It's not overly jammed this week. I don't know where everyone was. But, oh, yep, you've just reminded me, Gary. Before we go to the BTS hotline, you went for a kebab post-match in Athlone.
I did. I had to get one more in. I was stood up. Just want to let everybody know that I was stood up by my compatriot here.
This is going to, I know when I said this to you, your jaw hit the floor. I know the listeners will react the same. I'm kind of gone off kebabs. I know this is absolute blasphemy.
It is blasphemy. It's bullshit as well.
Yeah. I've kind of gone off them, as I've mentioned once or twice. Now, I haven't bragged about it too much. I've lost a lot of weight and have been eating very well.
Kebab is too good for you. It served you well for years.
The idea of putting a kebab in my body right now, it makes me a little bit sick.
Oh, my body's a temple.
No, it's far from a temple.
Jesus Christ.
Ate and drank well in Lisbon now. I actually went back to the gym for the first time today. So 2 weeks out of the gym, because when I came back from Lisbon, there was stuff on and blah, blah, blah. And I won't name him, but a very close friend of ours, listener to pod, had a little episode in the gym once with me where he had a bit of a blackout. Right. I almost had one of those today. It was actually awful. Pushed myself way too hard first day back. Didn't
eat lifting all the weights, boys. Jesus Christ. I had to close down the gym after him. Listen to this.
Didn't know whether I needed to get sick, whether I needed to go to the shacks. I genuinely thought I was going to pass out. So not a good day for me. But yeah, the idea of putting a kebab in me now, I'm gone off. I'll eat pizza till the cows come home, but a kebab... Then again, yesterday at the snooker in Belfast, went for a wee chippy across the road from the waterfront and ended up having a battered burger meal. So, yeah, my body's definitely not a temple. I don't know. It's just something about kebab in particular. I just can't. There's a mental block there right now.
Well, we'll have to iron that out, yeah. Yeah, we went to one place and I didn't fancy it. Oh, yeah, we looked at a place online and I didn't go to the place that we normally go to. You know that little dingy place down from Supermax?
I thought that was gone, that place, no?
No, the place we went to before was a really nice place.
Ephesus.
But it's gone. Yeah, gone.
Oh, it's gone, yeah.
Yeah. You see, they heard that you weren't going to eat kebabs anymore. So they said, it's for God. But went to a place, Munch something. And I just went straight off the Google reviews, to be quite honest, because I was also a bit, where do I go? And I'll tell you one thing. Now, I didn't go for the kebab. I went for the kebab tray. I was being good myself. And I will say one thing. It was absolutely sensational. It was gourmet. It was beautiful. The right sauce, the right meat, the right chips are lovely. My friend had a snack box there as well. He was quite pleased at it all. Now, he doesn't live in Ireland, so like any type of chipper
is
heaven for him. But he enjoyed it. But I was really, really impressed. I will try and get the name here.
Yeah,
now.
Please do. I always we do these kebab reviews. Now, we didn't do that many this season, but every time we go to do them, we're like, oh, what was the name of that place? You know, that should be point number one, really, where we went.
Yeah.
The good people of BTS land want to visit there next season.
Yeah, Naked Pizza and Kebab was the place we attempted to go to, but it was...
Well, once you hear pizza and kebab in the same sentence, that's a no-no.
That was, yes, but the reviews were sensational.
Right, okay.
But I went to Munch Mix on Connacht Street.
Just for the name, that's worth a visit, I'd have to say.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one thing. I was called boss and everything, so I can't complain at all. Really good, high quality meal. So
For the next El Clasico now, I'll see a psychiatrist and I'll try and get him to rev me up.
Yes, you need to get this out of your system.
Just need a little rewire in there somewhere.
Absolutely, correct.
Right, BTS hotline before we go. As I said, it's not overly jam-packed this week, so we could do it with your help for next week's show, folks. Yeah, you're a big part of this. It's the reason we do this is for the listeners. Sam, is there a more nailed-on result than UCD beating us in Richmond, relegating us in Richmond? So Sam is a Watford fan, for anyone that doesn't know.
Yeah, well, you know,
I can see it in my mind's eye.
Well, we've been to a few of those games.
We have.
In Richmond Park, playoff finals. Could UCD go for the three in a row? Very possible. I can see it.
I can see it too. Ronan McCarthy, UCD are my pick of the bunch from the playoff teams, but still wouldn't even run the Premier team close. Format is perfect. I think if they get Waterford, they have every chance. Not sure against a Galway, probably not against a Sligo, but it's a one-off game. It's a one-off game.
Yeah, I was saying that to someone last night. You wouldn't know Cristiano Ronaldo if he came into the room, really. And we were talking about those types of situations. Like, and I said to him, Longford Town could beat Real Madrid another day.
Well,
not saying that, but it is the final. We looked at it before where UCD managed to get up into the Premier Division at Waterford's expense and then stay up against Waterford the following year. So why not?
Simon Canning agrees UCD could beat Waterford. Just Ronan's last point there, format is perfect. Some people, I've been reading online, some people are not happy with the format in that the semi-finals are two-legged, meaning you're playing the same team a minimum of six times a season. If you haven't met them in the cup, it could be more.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first division playoff final, is that one or two legs? I actually can't remember.
First division is a straight final, so there's four more games, I think.
The first division final, i.e. the semi-final. Is that one or two legs? Can you remember?
One leg. Division final is a final, in the strictest of terms, game.
And then the final.
Can I make a suggestion here? Now, I know people in the first division, you know, want something to play for and blah, 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 which I can understand, Longford Town included. Does it minimise, in a way, finishing second?
There's
20 points in the difference between Cove and Treaty here.
Yeah.
No, before you go on, I have a suggestion.
Yeah, I think I know where you're going, but go ahead.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Well, what would you say? Now, this might be more shite, but third and fourth play each other to play second to then play ninth in the Premier.
Yeah.
Was that what you were thinking?
Yeah, yeah. For sure. It used to be like that, wasn't it? It was second used to get straight through, third and fourth played each other. It used to be like that at one stage.
All right, okay.
Yeah, so I think that's a much fairer system.
Yeah, like just to have, let's say, third and fourth play each other and...
One or two legs, what way would you go there?
I don't know, are we dragging it out a bit too much with two legs?
Two legs, probably for a game like that, is probably fair. But then the next one has to be two legs as well. Yeah, no, I don't know. It really suited Longford the year of COVID that it was only one leg of games. I think that really suited us.
It did, yeah. Just batter these lads as best you can and we'll go on to the next one if we get there.
Yeah.
I would be...
Look, you're never going to keep everyone happy. I think it's very important to... And it really annoys me when you hear people talking about the first division, the fifth team getting is ridiculous. And these are people that will not darken the door of a first division match all year long.
Yeah, exactly. What are you talking about? Nothing to do with you.
Every year around this time of year, this debate will start about, the first division, it's a joke that the fifth team is in it and half the division getting in the playoffs. If the playoffs weren't formatted the way they are, you'd get crowds of, you know, a couple of hundred of games in the first division with so many dead rubbers. Like Longford there, we had right up until the last game of the season, every game counted.
Yeah, to a degree. Yeah, that's fair. They managed to dig themselves into that position, to be fair.
Only in the last few weeks did Finn Harps have no chance of playoffs. You know, even if you go back probably 6 or 7 weeks ago, Kerry were probably still in with a chance. You have to give teams that carrot because it will just die a death otherwise. But no matter what way you format it, probably not going to keep everyone happy. But look, that's where we're going to leave it for this week. Series 9, episode 34 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Once again, we were brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. Once again, congratulations to Anthony and everybody at Athlone Town on their amazing double for a team that's only been on the go for 5 or 6 years to complete the double and do as well as they did in Europe this year as well. It's an absolutely fantastic success. So well done to them. But we'll be back again next week. And until then, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.